Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. When it comes to the realms of esoteric studies, UFOs, conspiracy theories, alternative health discoveries, politics, and secret agendas, few people have been privy to as much inside information as Regina Meredith has. As a pioneer in the world of conscious media and one of the most respected TV hosts and bloggers in the metaphysical arena, she's pretty much heard it all. And as a dedicated spiritual adventurer in her private life, she's personally experienced much of it too. Oh, the story she can tell. And indeed does so engagingly in her newly published autobiography, Accidentally on Purpose, Tripping Through Life with Regina. Regina Meredith joins me tonight to share some of the behind-the-scenes events, discoveries, experiences, individuals, and non-physical guides that accidentally on purpose influenced her journey from mainstream sports news reporter and presenter to pioneering co-creator and host of original online metaphysical programming, as well as her private decades-long exploration into the world of esoteric and hidden sciences. Regina Meredith, welcome.
Thank you, Sandy. How are you doing tonight? I hear a little bit of a sniffle there.
Yes, I think I, like many people, I've been victim to the dreaded bug that's crossing the world right now. And you too, I hear.
Just a little tiny bit, just a little bit of a cough. But, you know, I have this theory. It's the holiday cookies that do it. Everybody starts binging on all these wonderful foods and all the sugars, alcohols, if one drinks alcohol and so forth. I think they lower the immune system because I noticed I would always get a cold after I had made lots and lots of cookies because that also meant I ate a lot of them too.
Well, that's an interesting theory. It certainly beats the one that I've been, you know, carrying around, which is all of these solar winds bringing in these, you know, interstellar germs into our environment. Cookies.
We'll just call it,
I like that.
We'll just call it the cookie conundrum, okay?
Yeah, absolutely. So, Regina, you know, looking over your resume, your career is filled with firsts, from hosting America's first national TV and radio ski report, to becoming one of the first women in television sports broadcasting, to hosting the first vegetarian cooking show on PBS, to co-creating the first online network offering consciousness-expanding interviews with leading authors and experts in the alternative and metaphysical arenas. Now, I'm sure there's some might put that down to incredible ambition and a carefully constructed career plan. But as you share in Accidentally on Purpose, the plan you were following, albeit initially unconsciously, was more of a carefully constructed soul plan. At what point did you become aware of that?
I think after I had done a few firsts, I thought, you know, it's so interesting this keeps happening because I'm not an ambitious person, never have been. When I get an idea that I'd like to do something, I will pick up that thread, follow through on it, and I'll do my due diligence. It's true. So if I, as you know from the book, if I bump into an opportunity or someone poses a challenge to me or I happen to be in need financially at the moment and someone calls and says, hey, there's a job as a news anchor open as of today, you know, there are like two people in a city that can fill that job, right, that role. And I'll jump on it and do my very best. But that's how it all has unfolded in my life, is really much more in response to something that's being asked for on a soul level, as I call it, on a spirit level, than what I have chosen consciously. And that's not to say I haven't. With Conscious Media Network, for example, that was really a collaboration between my ex-husband, Scott Meredith, and I. to choose to use our skills at this that particular point in our lives in 2004 and start this kind of network to fill a need that wasn't being fulfilled at that time. Now, since then, there are thousands of conscious streaming networks, but in the day, there weren't any, not for video.
Sure.
And so
I mean,
that was
you
a
really
conscious
have
choice.
Been a pioneer, haven't you, in so many areas?
It has turned out that way, and I think part of it is that in my own life, I really like the new in general. I want to hear a new perspective. I want to hear a new story. I want to try a new recipe. I want to read a book that has content that I've never read before. And so once I've been doing anything for a little while, then generally I'll find that I'm ready to move on. And it can be lucrative. It can be wonderful, you know, whatever I'm doing. You know, I've done some, had some really good career steps in terms of the projects I've done and the shows I've done. And I've chosen to walk away from them because they had served their purpose, and I didn't want to keep replicating news that was already out there that I had put out. And usually by that time, others will have entered the field. And by then, I kind of want to move on. Does that make sense?
But at some point, you must have, you know, got an inkling. Hang on, there's a bigger picture unfolding here. There is a purpose to all of this. Where is it leading?
Mm-hmm. Yes, and you know, when looking back on my career, there's been one common thread to it. Starting at a very young age of 23, since then I have been in front of the camera. So that's virtually my entire life. I've been in front of the camera, and the early jobs were really just for the development of the skill craft of being on camera. I didn't particularly enjoy them, even though in one case, such as in my NBC days, which I do write about in the book, it was quite high profile for a girl who's 26, 27 years old. But it wasn't soul satisfying. It was getting me in a position to be comfortable with having attention, scrutiny, lots of eyeballs on me, and more so, having to make really important life discoveries and decisions about money, high profile, and all of that. And I do discuss that in the book, that little existential crisis or understanding I went through during those days at NBC. By most people's accounts, to be that young and being flown around the country first class, staying in, you know, the best hotels in New York City on Central Park, unlimited funds to spend, all to work one day a week, basically one day a week, which was the sports coverage on Sundays, which would be one long day. Now, there's prep for it during the week, but not an ungodly amount. And you would think that that would be the apex of one's career. Where do you go from there? But that's only if that is your dharma, and something that you, on a very deep spiritual level, have chosen for your path of expression in this lifetime, well, you would be on top of the world. And then at age 26, you'd be struggling to stay on top and make sure you weren't toppled by someone down the road that was a little younger, a little smarter, a little better, a little prettier, and so forth, which is the world of television in general. And so the rest is kind of hanging on to what you have. I didn't perceive it that way at all because I had never wanted to be on camera, nor in television to begin with. And, you know, I do talk about that in how I ended up there. And so this ended up being my life path, and I really didn't have an idea, I would say, till I was a good 10 to 15 years on that path, really just trying to make ends meet and using institutionalized media as later on as a news anchor and then on news programs bringing unique content in and then documentaries and so forth, all within the established televised media. It wasn't until pretty far into that journey that I understood this has actually all been prep to use that media for something that is my soul path, which of course is where I am now.
Yeah. I mean, even as you were developing that highly visible career in traditional media, you were also privately diving deeper and deeper into an exploration of the unknown. How difficult was it to keep those two parts of your life separate in that period? Because, of course, it would have been professional suicide if you had, you know, let it out of the bag.
Well, I did. I did at one point let it out of the bag. It was interesting. It was very interesting to see the response from people. When I believe this was, it actually wasn't that risky now that I think of it timing-wise. This was right after my news anchor days when I was, I had cut loose and I was really struggling with and experimenting with how to use media for what I considered useful, conscious content because there wasn't a model for it. And so that's where I wanted to bridge those two worlds. I wanted to bridge them on the airwaves. And I was ultimately on, to a degree, able to do that. But during that period of time when I was putting it together, someone in the editorial staff of, at that time, the Sacramento Bee, had learned that I had been doing automatic writing. I have no idea how this came to their attention because I was quite private about it. And so they asked if they could do a feature article on me, and I thought, well, it won't hurt anything. Who'll read it anyway? Well, it ended up, it was in the Sunday paper as the feature article, two-page spread with pictures of me and everything. And I thought, oh, goodness, let's see what happens now. And it was an interesting response. I think there were a lot of people who had followed me professionally that were quite surprised. My family wasn't embarrassed. They didn't understand me. But you know, they thought it was interesting that something that kind of out of the range of mainstream and normal would have even gotten that kind of attention. But see, there was this period of time in the 1980s in particular when a lot of the famous channels and spiritualists that everybody knows of that became more or less household names really started getting their legs. So the 80s was, as you know, Sandy, a very expansive period of time beginning to tap into unseen forces, you know, and kind of within a new age way and within the new age community. So the people were hungry for it, and there was a very active metaphysical bookshop that brought speakers in from all over in our city, in Sacramento at the time. So looking back on it, it probably wasn't as crazy as it seemed. It's that it was the first time that had happened in the mainstream paper. So I did start bridging it, and after that, I never went back to really mainstream programming. I went into alternative programming that was kind of borderline. I did environmental work. I started something called the EnviReport, which was, this was in 1991, two, right in there, which was taking kind of helping the consumer make more intelligent decisions in terms of protecting their home environment from toxicity and the environment itself. So, but again, I had to go and convince the news director at a television station, the CBS affiliate, to allow me to do this on their site. So they did. They were open-minded enough to do it. It went very well, and that was the first environmental report, first franchise environmental report on the evening news in the United States. So, you know, I would find a way to present things in so that the not just the news directors, but the audience could feel comfortable with them. And that's really what I always strive to do, is make people comfortable with a new range of information, whether it's really far out or just something that's slightly, you know, afar from where they are right now.
And, of course, you did that, too, with Regina's Vegetarian Table on PBS, which was the first vegetarian show.
Well, you know, technically speaking, there was
Regina, have we lost you? Okay. Well, looks like we've just lost Regina, but she's calling straight back in, so hopefully she'll be with us. There she is. Hi,
I'm
Regina.
Hi. Yeah, just I heard this loud noise and then I was the phone went dead. Yes, where were we? It was having
you
to do
with
the cooking.
You were talking about Vegetarian
show.
Table. Yeah.
Yes. I've been writing a column for the Bee, the Sacramento Bee, which was a large newspaper. It was like the 20th largest paper in the country. And that was the first time anyone had done a vegetarian cooking column in a mainstream newspaper at that time. And it became clear that because I was already plugged into PBS doing documentaries and hosting other shows, that the time may have arrived for that. Well, right when I started Regina's Vegetarian Table on PBS, which was paired back-to-back with Julia Childs, Cooking with Julia Childs, two other women had come up with the same idea to do a vegetarian cooking show. But because they were afraid of the backlash from the word vegetarian, they chose not to call it that and kept kind of a softer version going. And as it turned out, again, the time was right, and people actually, they were actually drawn to the show because of the word vegetarian, which no one knew. It was a risk at PBS for them to do that. And it turned out that it paid off for them because, again, people were just opening their minds up in mass to the concept of having, including more fresh vegetables in the diet. It wasn't necessarily pedantic. My reasons were philosophical, but I didn't pose those on the show. I just posed it as a fresh and lovely way to eat and add to your diet. So, again, it bridged those worlds really with ease, you know, for PBS and for myself and for the audience.
Mm. I guess you're a cereal pioneer, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm a cereal pioneer. Actually, I'm thinking about doing another new thing, which I won't talk about just yet for 2019. I don't think
okay.
it's being done out there.
Okay. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. My guest tonight is a pioneer in the world of conscious media and one of the most respected TV hosts and bloggers in the metaphysical arena, Regina Meredith. And we're discussing Regina's newly published autobiography, Accidentally on Purpose, Tripping Through Life with Regina. Still to come, seeing behind the manipulation of reality, the messy origins of humankind, UFOs, conspiracies, and adventures between dimensions, and more after this break.
The future of internet radio is here. OM Times Radio. IOM FM.
Ascending Hearts is no ordinary dating site, but a spiritual dating site with a purpose, to link you with your soulmate. We engineer the serendipity so you can trust that you will attune with someone that has the same matching vibration as you. Ascending Hearts, the conscious dating site for the spiritually aware. Try Ascending Hearts for free, ascendinghearts.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
Hi, this is New Age Grammy winner Paul Avgerinos. Thanks for listening to OM Times Radio, and please support my peaceful healing music with a purchase at iTunes, Amazon, or wherever you shop for fine music. Just put my name into the search engine, Paul Avgerinos, A, V like Victor, G like George, E-R-I-N-O-S. You can also visit me at roundskymusic.com. Thanks for listening, and I'm wishing you the brightest of blessings.
I am Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called the Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family, and then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, you know, your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at embracerefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Regina Meredith, in Accidentally on Purpose, you're remarkably honest about your life, both the good parts and those you refer to as the comedy of accidents, bad decisions and misfortunes along the way. There's no sugarcoating there to make yourself look good. How difficult or how easy was it for you to open yourself up and tell it like it was and still is in some circumstances?
Well, yeah, that's an interesting question. When I wrote the book, when I started writing the book, I simply wrote the book because I was meditating one day and my guidance said,
write a book of your story, your life story. And I didn't know why, but one thing I had learned by then is when that kind of affirmative statement would come across in my meditation, I know how to separate those from anything that's going on in my conscious mind. And I tend to follow that. So I said, okay. So I literally went to the coffee shop and started writing my book. I had no agenda. I didn't know where it would end up. I didn't know when. I just started writing. And I know it's a very different style of writing than people often see. And there is a lack of self-consciousness in it, which for someone that's actually quite shy and quite private, I'm kind of surprised it came out that way. But I was literally just going back into the flow of my life with no expectation and absolutely no judgment of my life. What I had done, where I tripped and fallen down, where I was rising high, I didn't have any attachment to any, like, positioning myself in any way for anybody. I was simply documenting my journey as it unfolded. And as you know from the beginning of the book, my life has taken a different kind of twist, as has, I think, with other people who have perceived that they were abandoned or have been abandoned very early in life. Your life takes a different kind of twist. And I didn't have any real guidance per se in my life. I more or less raised myself, and through no fault of anyone's, it just turned out that way. And as a result, I just led this kind of self-directed life with no judgment of it, because I didn't have any expectation placed on me by anyone. I had no judgment as to the outcome of things. Does that make sense?
It does make sense. It makes a lot of sense. And it makes even more sense when one reads the book and learns some of the details about your life and your experiences. Mm-hmm. You know, what struck me about the book is how seamlessly, in a way, you have woven those personal details about your life, you know, what made you the person that you are, the experiences you've had along the way, both in your public life as well as in your personal spiritual life. And, you know, the things that you've learned, the things that you've been exposed to, the things that you have exposed in your career, especially in the conscious arena. And, you know, it makes for a really riveting and enjoyable read, I have to say.
Thank you. I'm so glad you feel that way. I've been really lucky. I've had various people write me after reading the book, and it's only been out a week and a half or so, saying I couldn't put it down. And I thought, well, gosh, then I hit the mark. I just wanted it to flow. And so I think if someone's staying tuned into it and says they can't put it down, it's because it's literally a flow. There's nothing there to block you from going from one chapter to the next. And I think part of that is because that's actually how I have felt in my own life. While I've just never really taken these very large changes that have occurred, some of them quite suddenly and tragically, I haven't really taken them very seriously, you might say, as some people call it. It's just part of life. Life is wonderful. It's supporting you. You're flying high. Boom, something happens and it's gone. And then there you are. And there's one poignant moment in my life that I did chronicle in the book that had to do with the time after NBC. It went from a mighty kind of lifestyle to extraordinarily humble after that. And I didn't really differentiate between those two experiences on a qualitative level. Yes, I was making a lot of money and moving around and being treated very nicely in the NBC lifestyle. And the next, I was in a very, very ordinary position waiting on people. And I didn't feel I was less of a person. It's just living in the present. And maybe that is the hallmark. My husband, Zeus, says this all the time. He's never known anyone that actually lives in the present virtually all the time for the good and bad of it. You know, it has downsides and it has upsides. And, you know, most people think, well, what could possibly be a downside of living in the present? Well, there are some. There are some downsides. But that's the only way I know how to live. And so when I was writing the book and when a reader reads it, they're not going to find a lot of hanging on to the moment that was just rendered before in the book. I just move right on to the next thing, just as in real life. I just move on to the next thing.
But is some of that, you know, due to the fact that you've done so much inner work, so much spiritual exploration? You've had incredible spiritual experiences yourself, and therefore you have, you know, you do have a higher perspective. You have a much bigger, you know, back in time and forward perspective that tempers some of those things that happen in the, you know, the current 3D world that make many people so anxious and they get so caught up in.
Yes, that probably does have something to do with it. When I referred to that moment in the book a little bit ago after NBC, when I was still quite young and trying to figure life out, and then the fall, you might call it, I had not developed spiritually at that time. I was in my mid-20s, and I had not really had a chance to sink my teeth into. I didn't have the luxury. I was young and trying to find my way and figure out how to make a living, and got tossed into television, how to just survive in the world of television. So I wasn't on a spiritual journey at that time, although I had had some events happen that I, at the time, I didn't understand were quite rare. So they'd happened, but I wasn't really putting much truck in them, and I wasn't examining them at all. It wasn't really until my very early 30s that I began examining all this. And late 20s, a little bit, with the introduction of that wild character, Madame Vallaud-Beauvais, my ballet teacher, that's when I really started contemplating more metaphysical matters. Now, I had been flowing relatively well, except for in my personal life. That is where I was really not developed and not strong. If I had a boyfriend and that boyfriend left me for someone else, it was literally a matter of survival because of events early in life, where I would stop eating. And it's not unusual for teenagers, but I think I was a little extreme. I couldn't think, I couldn't sleep, I couldn't eat. My life was over to the most, you know, dramatic degree. I went inside, I didn't talk about it a lot, but I think that the notion of abandonment, which has been my life, you know, my life lesson and my life bugaboo, which has been very, very interesting in very recent times because it's something that's come back full circle that I've had to look at. And I think that was the exception of one place where I didn't flow that well. I'd have to really take some time to put myself back together. But as far as all of the other ebbs and flows of life, it wasn't that challenging for me to say, oh, well, here we go. Now this is what's next. That said, once I began developing and going inside and then having many, many more metaphysical experiences, spiritual experiences and adventures of an extraordinary nature, and then just connecting with my soul group, which I go on at some length about in the book, starting in my early 30s, that started bringing a context for really the value of learning not to attach too much to any one thing, because life was going to change. And I came to accept the one thing about life is there are going to be changes. So you might not like it, but there's no point holding on for dear life. You're just going to make whatever this transition happening in your life is longer and more painful. And so I began developing spiritual tools to work with and became even lighter in my sense of the now and the sense of letting go when it was time. It doesn't mean it's not painful. You know, it doesn't mean if something ends, I don't have my moment of tears and like, whoa, I didn't see that one coming. Yes, of course. But it goes quickly. I feel it completely. It passes through me. And then I move on. And so I do believe that's where the spiritual maturity and development that was built over decades has really come to be something that I know that I can rely on. And if you know you can rely on life with a capital L, which just never fails to amaze me. I love watching life unfold for people when they think the worst thing has happened. Sometimes I have, you know, my intuition, bunny ears will be up, and I'm thinking, nope, this is a really good thing happening to her right now, or him, whomever. They just can't see it yet. And then you sit back and watch how the universe works, how their guides work, how life works, how their soul and their higher mind all work together in companionship to start bringing about these unexpected changes that always result in something better. Ultimately, it always results in something better. So I have a great respect and absolute passion for the way in which the unseen world and the seen world and the known world, material world, work together, and that mystery. And one thing I learned along the way that I think is really critical for everybody, and that is time. Time doesn't pass the same in this dimension as it does in the dimension where our guidance lives and where our more refined other half lives. So when we get anxious and we think, oh, this is the end of everything, you can't see around the corner in the unseen world. You don't know what's lining up for you. So if you go into this fatalistic mode, it's not doing anyone any good, but maybe it's part of your grieving process and you have to. Everyone's wired differently. But ultimately, if we can disconnect from time as we understand it, that to me is a real key. And a lot of times people, my friends and family, say, oh yeah, easy for you, your life's magical. No, I've had more than my share of upsets in life, but I don't fight it, and I don't fight the timing of it, because there are times in which you're trying to create something new, something you think is going to be helpful to you, to someone else, valuable in the world. You want to give what you can of yourself, and you're not being supported. And, you know, there can be a couple of reasons for that, but oftentimes it is a matter of time. So I always say to people, don't let time be your enemy, because that's what it feels like. You may have a personal revelation while you're meditating, or you may have a reading from someone or a channeling from someone. They say, yes, oh, this thing is about to happen. It's just around the corner. Well, around the corner in terms of your soul and your guides could be literally 10 years from now. They're not seeing time the same way we see time. So you can never kind of, that's the one thing you can never nail down, is when are these changes going to occur? And I think if we can get comfortable with that, which is a big part, I think, of the spiritual maturation process, to know that everything does have its own time, be comfortable with it. Make yourself useful. Make yourself joyful. Study. Do what you have to do in those fallow periods when time doesn't appear to be on your side. But don't give up. Understand that most things do come around in time, right? Yeah, and so I think that's probably the thing that has helped me be relatively, again, relatively free of long-term grinding pain in life, is because I do allow time to take its course.
Yeah. You know, I want to discuss some of the topics covered in Accidentally on Purpose. They're very seductive chapter titles. You know, people who watch Open Minds, people who subscribe to Gaia Television, you know, the subscribers to your own new streaming network, they're used to the, you know, wonderful interviews that you do, and you have interviewed probably everybody, you know, who's anybody in these arenas. What are the topics that, you know, how do you choose your topics? What are the topics that really interest you and that you want, you know, you really want to expose to others?
Oh, goodness. Well, I'm very open-minded, so that's a lot of topics. Yeah, like you, Sandy, you and I are very similar that way. We're actually passionate and curious about so many different things. So that certainly opens up the field in terms of the players we can invite in with us, the various authors, lecturers, teachers, and so forth. But I would say I notice in my own life at a given time, I might find that I'm particularly intrigued with new innovations in the world of health and well-being. Well, as life would have it, with a capital L, all of a sudden, I'll start bumping into stories that are unique. Someone will contact me saying, I have a new invention. So once I develop kind of a curiosity in a particular direction, I find that a lot of that information starts kind of ending up in my view. And so I'll run with that and maybe do a couple, two or three interviews on a particular genre of information, such as health and well-being, or new inventions or technology in health. And then the same thing happens in the other areas too. I do have a fascination. Again, my greatest fascination is with the meeting of the unseen and seen worlds. And in fact, right now, before I go to bed at night, I happen to be reading a book by Gary Lachman on the life of Rudolf Steiner. Mm. My son Stuart went through the Waldorf school system. And so I knew the basic tenets, and I'd read a little bit about Steiner. I'd been to Dornach, Switzerland, to the Goetheanum, and where his community and his facilities were all founded. I did all of that, but I had never actually read about him and his life's development. And I just had such a deep respect for essentially the end product of all of his research and understanding, which spiritual research, which happened to be the Waldorf school system, which was anthroposophical education, anthroposophical agriculture and gardening, medicine. And I had done stories on these things. But reading about him in general, to see where his aha came, where it all became clear to him in his mid-30s, is really, I related to so strongly, because for me it was the same thing. It was when he realized and started understanding that the unseen, in fact, for him, it was very extreme. The unseen world was far more concrete and reliable to him than the material world and the personalities of human beings. And I understood, and I have always understood. You just don't know what people are going to do, but there is a science to the unseen world, of the mechanics of how the spiritual world works. Is actually fairly reliable. You may not know the details and exactly what's going to pop up next, but it's much more logical in its function, the way in which it functions. So for me, that's my greatest fascination, is where the worlds meet, as I mentioned just a little bit ago. Mm. And for anyone that is intrigued with Rudolf Steiner, I really enjoy Gary Lachman's writing. In fact, I just did an interview with him about a month and a half ago. He was a former lead guitarist for Blondie, the group Blondie. Yeah. And he ended up launching into a career as an author, and has written about a lot of the really fascinating spiritual characters of the last century, including Blavatsky and Gandhi and others. And this one on Rudolf Steiner, I particularly relate to, because he's getting down to the nuts and bolts of where it all comes together and how the seen and the unseen dance together and create our reality. So that's definitely my biggest passion, I'd say, and working with that, working with those principles. And then, of course, if you're going to do that, you have to look at what exists beyond in the known physical universe. And so that starts taking you into the subjects of extraterrestrial life, for example, because I'm open to it. Very open to it. And I had the experience of going out into the field with Dr. Stephen Greer and his group a couple of times back in the earlier days, right around, in fact, during the time of his public disclosure at the National Press Club back in 2001. And that to me, I mean, everything about the notion that we're not the only intelligent species in the universe is just logic. It just makes sense. So who are these other beings? And how are they interfacing with us? Well, a lot of that information, of course, comes out of the military. So then that takes you down a lot of rabbit holes, because that's where a lot of the evidence exists, you know? And so I really like to kind of, I'm an aggregator of information, and like to get down to the nuts and bolts of, for example, what would I share with someone if they were new to the topic, they thought it was either kooky, untrue, wishful thinking, whatever you want to apply to it by way of, you know, rejection of the subject. I've tried to look around for what would be the one book I would share with them that makes sense, that people can sink their teeth into, even if they're a total skeptic, and say, well, if any of these people involved in this story are telling the truth in this book, then you kind of have to look at it. And that would be Nick Pope's book, the Rendlesham Forest Affair, you know, which happened on a British military base. And so stories like that where you start looking at, and another thing about that particular book that I recommend it for is this.
Regina, I'm going to have to interrupt you and hold you. I want you to hold that thought because I really want to come back to this, but we have to go to break now. You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and tonight I'm speaking with co-founder of Conscious Media Network, host of Open Minds on Gaia TV, and founder of her own free streaming video network, Regina Meredith. We're talking about her newly published autobiography, Accidentally on Purpose. We'll be back with more from Regina Meredith after this break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, Om Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. Om Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single Om Times endeavor. Host your show with Om Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on Om Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
Hi, this is recording artist and composer Yuval Ron, inviting you to a voyage through the chakras, a new double album of guided meditations to transform your life, a sublime musical medicine for nourishing inner peace and reaching to your higher virtues. Get it now at metamindfulnessmusic.com, M-E-T-T-A, mindfulnessmusic.com.
Imagine being fired because of who you love. Imagine being denied medical treatment because of who you marry. Imagine being evicted because of who you are. Millions of Americans don't have to imagine this. They have to live it. Because in 31 states, it's legal to discriminate against LGBT people. Get the facts at beyondido.org. Brought to you by the Gill Foundation and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Regina Meredith, my apologies for having to interrupt you there. It was fascinating, and I do want you to continue. You were talking about Nick Pope.
Yes, okay. So in the book, The Rendlesham Forest Affair by Nick Pope, what's particularly valuable, and the reason this is the book I recommend for people who want to introduce someone else to the subject of contact, extraterrestrial contact, and UFOs, is because it also demonstrates the anatomy of the cover-up. I think the biggest, the most common statement people make is, well, if it's so, how come I haven't read about it in the paper? You know, how come I haven't seen it? Well, this book explains exactly how that happens, and it's very, very detailed, and I think he did a wonderful job of expressing this because he really went moment by moment behind the scenes with each of the branches of the military to show, and the government, how these cover-ups occur from the first moment, how evidence disappears, where the film goes, the pictures go. So it really kind of has it all. And that's just one incident out of thousands and thousands. Now, there are governments around the world. Italy, certainly, is one. Mexico, Brazil, France, many of the countries now acknowledge the fact that there is extraterrestrial existence and that they have been studied by their military and their governments at some level, and they have admitted that. And then it's up to people to take that up or not. The point to me of it is, we're an interesting species, but we're not the only species. So who is coming here and toward what end? And what do we have to share with each other in the end? Unlike a lot of people in the UFO community, some are afraid of the notion of others, of off-planet cultures, as the politically correct term. Others look to them as gods, like they're going to come here and save us. I don't see it that way. I just see it as something that could ultimately be collaborative, but also as curiosity. If we can go somewhere and check in on another life form, we'll do it if we're capable of it. Well, same is true of other species. So ultimately, it's a matter of becoming a more sophisticated, nuanced species ourselves. And if there is, say, some information that can be shared between our species and another species that can advance certain problems that need to be solved here, great. I'm totally open to that. But I do not put other species above the human species in any kind of classic sense of the word. I don't think that, you know, even though we can behave badly, and we do, I don't consider the human species a lesser species. We are sublime in our nature, in our dual nature. And the part of us that can recognize beauty and valor and all of the higher virtues and shed tears over these things is just a tiny glimpse into the incredibly refined nature of who we truly are. So I have a lot of respect for humanity. We just haven't chosen to tap into our deepest aspect of self consciously, for the most part. We're not there yet. But when we choose to, and many people have and are opening up to that, we are going to evolve into something that I think is just a more brilliant version of ourselves. But it's already there. It's in us.
You know, there are so many juicy topics in your book, and so much valuable information that you have to share. It's wonderful to see you coming out from behind the microphone, in the sense of, you know, you've always been the one noted for finding the people, asking the questions, and now you're stepping, you're taking a sidestep, and you're presenting at conferences, and you're answering some of those questions. You're giving us your unique perspective, which I'm sure many people have wanted for a long time, because you get to meet everybody. And, you know, you are such a critical thinker and so discerning in the, you know, the way you approach the people that you interview, that you are the person that we want to be. You know, you're the one who can get the information that we want to have, you know, sort aside all of the, you know, separate the wheat from the chaff. And you are known for that. But I'm really pleased to see you coming out and in your own right being a presenter, because you have so much to offer us.
Thank you. Those are very kind words. I appreciate them, Sandy. You know, honestly, part of the reason that I've done the interviews I've done over the years is because of experiences I've had and background knowledge that I have embraced. And I'm really looking for community by way of validation of those very things. So for me, if for the last, say, 30 some years, I've understood and accepted quite naturally that there are many intelligent species in the universe, then I'm always interested in speaking, and I've had some experiences in speaking to others who have had greater, far greater experiences, speaking to those who have literally been privy on the ground physically in the military, for example. And those are ways of validating things that I've come to look at, either I'm researching, I've come to accept, or I hold dear. So that's where a lot of it comes from, is wanting to validate my own experiences through the years. And as you know from reading the book, I've had quite a few really, you know, rather profound spiritual experiences. So it's always lovely to hear from someone else who's had a similar experience. So that can drive me to seek a particular author. I don't need to tell about my story. We can tell it through their story, which has been a very comfortable, easy way for me to live, to hide behind everybody else's stories. I think that's what you were getting to.
and there are so many people who have had similar experiences to you and never had the opportunity to have them validated, and that's why they watch your interviews.
Well, it's I think that's why this whole genre of information, your interviews included, and other people like us, has gained so much traction, is because as we start waking up to ourselves and waking up to life with a capital L and watching mysteries unfold and starting to say, hey, I don't think that's a coincidence. It's happened too many times now. So you start looking for the mechanics that work underneath that. Yeah, we're all looking to have these things validated in life, and myself included. And I've been very fortunate. I've had decades of validation for the experiences I've had. And this is just part and parcel. Like Rudolf Steiner, I'm totally comfortable with the unseen world and whatever surprises lie ahead.
You know, as I said, there are many juicy topics in the book. There are several I would love to have had the opportunity to talk about tonight, but instead I'm just going to tell people to read the book and they can learn about them there, because there are other things that I want to say in the few minutes we have left and that I want you to talk about, one of which is the retreats and workshops that you've started offering for those who wish to dive deep into new understandings of the nature of reality and life itself. Just tell us a few words about that.
Well, I have done two different formats. One is on a Friday night and all day Saturday. So that's the length of the workshop, which is just a slightly abbreviated form of the other one, which is the same plus half of a Sunday. I bring people together in relatively small groups. And when I've had the really intimate ones, I'll have only about 12 people together with me in my home. The others can go up to 30 and 40 people in a more public venue. And the point of these is in the first evening to very quickly get to the aspect of yourself that may have been hidden from you all along, the thing that gives you the most passion that you may have forgotten all about. So it is about diving deep into the self. And then from there, starting to explore it through other meditations. But the point is reconnecting with that kernel of that unique, beautiful, divine thing in you, genius in you, curiosity in you that's been there all along that you may not be living out right now. You may have forgotten all about due to essentially the survival demands of life, everyday life. And so it's a real awakening together. There's a lot of joy. At the end of the workshops, everybody's high. we're all hugging and high and so happy to have been together. So it's to awaken to yourself and start listening to that spark of desire from within you. That's what that's about. And I did not do too many last year in 2018, but I'm going to be doing a couple, and I haven't announced a date yet. In the late spring and also in the fall of 2019. And I'll have those dates up on my site once we've nailed them down.
And, of course, you are continuing to forge new ground with the creation of original content for your free video streaming site. Tell us a little bit about some of the content you offer there.
Well, a lot of it is, honestly, it's just whoever I choose to interview in the interview portions of the site, which is free. I chose not to have any passwords nor charge anyone for my interviews on my site. Instead, I'm having it supported by way of Patreon, which is a really good service for people like myself that want to keep our content free and still need to support the site. And so there, as Patreon members, I have a couple different levels. A $5 level, $10 level, and there will be others down the road. But on the $5 level, I do these podcasts on very specific concepts and theories and things that are principles that I personally use. And I share that with the public in these little vlogs, video podcasts. And I do that a couple times a month. And then at the next level, which is $10 and above, I have two live events a month. In one of them, I'm solo, and people can ask anything they wish about any topic, any interview, anything that I personally utilize in my own life, and we have conversation. It's turning into a really lovely international family. I just love it. And then the alternate times, which is every 2 weeks, once a month, is the live show with a guest. So it'll often be an interviewee or an author or some hot topic that I feel people really want to dig into, and they can ask questions of my guest, and I serve more as a moderator on those. And people can come on camera with us. So it really you know, someone in Australia will say to someone in Tennessee, Jim, I like your new haircut. You know, they're getting to know each other now. So it's really fun to have this budding community together through my site, which is just my name, reginameredith.com.
Yeah. Well, over the years, you know, through Conscious Media Network, Open Minds, and now your free streaming video network, you've reached millions of people around the world with information, insights, discoveries, messages of hope and enlightenment. I was going to ask you if you ever see yourself hanging up the microphone for good, but you've already hinted that there's no chance of you becoming a recovering pioneer.
No, I think I'm going to push forward with something new again this year, and there's still something I would like to do, and I'm going to wait and see if the universe surprises me. I would like to do a show that has a live studio audience, and you could almost say it's kind of stylistically like a network show like Oprah, but with these conscious subjects and people involved, and I think it will be a fascinating dynamic. That's on my wish list.
Well, may your wish be granted. Regina Meredith, we're out of time. Thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been a pleasure to speak with you.
Thank you, Sandy. You've been wonderful. Thank you. Wonderful question.
Thank you. Accidentally on Purpose, Tripping Through Life with Regina is available in hard copy format and on Kindle at Amazon.com. And for more information about Regina's free streaming video network and community, visit reginameredith.com. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I look forward to being with you at the same time next week. Till then, it's